We are now back in the studio, and we join the News Collective's Chris in an interview with Tim McSorley.
So,
good. How are you, Chris?
I'm good, and you?
Yeah, I'm doing pretty well. Yeah.
So you are with the Dominion newspaper?
Yes.
Can you explain what is the Dominion?
Yeah, for sure. So the Dominion's it's a national publication. It publishes about 8 times a year, and it's published by the Media Cooperative. So the Media Cooperative, the Dominion's been published for about the last 8 years or so. The Media Cooperative in the last 2 years has been a switch for us, and so that's the organization that publishes the Dominion, and it's a network of local media cooperatives across the country based out of Montreal, Halifax, Toronto, and Vancouver. And together we publish online at mediacoop.ca through an open publishing platform, so anybody can publish their own photos, videos, articles, and blogs. And then on top of that, we pool our resources and work together to publish the Dominion. And and we publish about 8 times a year, and we focus mostly on social justice issues, environmental issues, lots of coverage of Canadian resource extraction companies, mining, and the tar sands. Also a lot on Indigenous issues across Canada. And we're a collective of about 4 people, 5 people spread out across the country who work mostly on the Dominion, but there's probably about 2 dozen people who work kind of on a fairly regular basis on the Media Co-op across the country.
Mostly on the articles, what is your angle?
Well, in general, for the Dominion, like I said, the angle is social justice. We're an independent cooperative magazine, and so we try to take an angle that's different from the mainstream media. We'll often tackle similar ideas and stories that are covered in the mainstream press, but trying to interview people from directly impacted communities, people who aren't necessarily getting their voices heard in the mainstream media.
So it's like complementary or in contradiction with mainstream media? Depends on the articles.
Depends on the article. I'd say primarily it's in contradiction too, even though it covers similar topics. It's definitely, we have a really critical view of most of the corporate media and media that reinforces the status quo. And so, yeah, basically we try to, in any topic that we cover, present something that's different and kind of pushes things a bit further than the mainstream media does.
Can you talk to us about how you choose your perspectives or the issues you're talking about?
Yeah, for sure. So as a cooperative, we've tried to open up the editorial process. So up until a few years ago, it was a smaller editorial collective, and we'd solicit pitches from writers and develop story ideas ourselves. But since we switched to being a cooperative, basically the idea is that we've opened up the process for story selection too. So through the Media Co-op website, we solicit both journalists who want to pitch story ideas, but also that our readers and members can submit story ideas through the site, and we work off of those to try to develop story ideas from across the country. And it's really helped to broaden the topics that we cover, and also the topics from different regions across Canada. So instead of the ideas mostly focusing on stories coming out of the regions where we're located, either Montreal or Halifax or larger cities, we've been able to cover a lot more from different regions across Canada because there's been more participation.
If you're there today, it's people, and to talk about the People's Forecast, the climate justice issue, the last number of the special edition of the Dominion. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about what is this issue?
Sure, yeah. So once a year, the Dominion publishes a special issue. Normally, we have a print run of about 1,500 copies, and it goes out mostly to subscribers and to a few newsstands, or about 50 different newsstands across the country. But then once a year, we work on one particular topic and publish a special issue. So this year, we chose to do it on climate justice. In previous years, we've covered mining and the tar sands, the G8 and G20, the Olympics, and so it's been a pretty wide range of topics that we've tackled, and the idea is that we print 15,000 copies and try to get into as many hands across the country, and ideally it's distinguished from regular issues as being something that's a bit more timeless, not something that's really newsy, but something that people can use as a resource guide across the country for several years to come. So we're still giving out copies of the mining issue and the tar sands issue because the information still stays relevant. So that's what we're trying to do with this issue too.
And why the climate justice issue?
Again, part of our process is trying to open it up. So in fact, this year for the first time, we actually had a call for proposals for for the topic for the special issue. And so people from across the country sent in their ideas for what the topic should be. We narrowed it down to a list of about five, and then from that we put it out for another consultation, and our members and readers voted on it and gave us our feedback. And so the topic that generated the most interest out of all of them was for an issue on climate justice, and basically the idea of exactly how do we work in ideas of social justice, equality, and empowerment into the fight against climate change and against, basically against climate change and for environmental solutions.
But what exactly mean the climate justice?
So the idea behind climate justice, and I have to be honest, when we first started tackling the topic too, I wasn't as familiar with the term either. It's not necessarily something that's really widely known. But the idea is to basically right now there's a huge push, and it's great to see, against climate change. But what we've seen more and more is that these efforts to combat climate change have come through a lot of market-based solutions, and a lot of solutions are based more on trying to continue to produce materials and extract oil and minerals and coal and maintain fossil fuels, but find a way to somehow offset that. But in reality, it's becoming more and more clear that as a society, we can't keep producing at the same level, and that simply trying to balance things out isn't going to change a system that's creating these problems. And so the idea behind climate justice is to work in ideas of social justice, of equality, of empowerment, and working with communities that are directly affected by climate change in order to really change the system and not simply say, well, a carbon market where we pay $20 to offset a plane ticket and the fuel that's used for that, or reforestation, where basically trees that are already planted and a forest that already exists is bought by a company or paid for by a company so that they can offset, more tar sands extraction. That isn't a real solution to climate change. It's not a real solution to the structural problem that we're basically in this constant race of producing more and more. And that's simply it's simply something that we can't sustain. And that really we need to re-examine the basis of it all. And in reality, for a lot of people, it's an anti-capitalist critique. It's a critique that this system that we're in, that's constant, that kind of supposes that we can continue to keep producing at the same rate and continue to focus on profits more than environmental sustainability and on people's health and other issues, then that's the real problem, and that we need to figure out ways to address that when we're talking about addressing climate change.
Before going further with that, and with Cameron Fenton, will happen soon. Will arrive soon. We'll go to a piece that Frank Lopez, I record with Jeffrey Lowers. And Frank said, Jeffrey Lowers introduced ENCIF during the screening in Eugene. I'll say for another time that ENCIF is a movie that Frank was producing and now is doing a tour with it. That's talking a lot about how this civilization is destroying communities and destroying the land and the planet in general, and why we have to fight those things, and why we have to put an end on the entire civilization in the point of view of the movie. So Frank, on his blog on ncf.com, but on the blog, if you go on ncf.com, you will find this too. Jeff Lowers introduced ncf during the screening in Eugene, Oregon. After spending nearly a third of his life in a cage, Lowers remains as militant as ever as he understands what's at stake. He has used his theater as a political prisoner to tell the world that we must do what we have to if we want to maintain life of the planet below zero. But I will come back on the fact that Jeffrey Lowers, this is about the same amount of the time Jeffrey Lowers did, is about 10 years of prison for torching SUV in Eugene, Oregon. Because Frank is talking also in the article about Tim DeChristopher. But if you want to know more, go on the text. But he said also both gentlemen were fighting for the same thing, the protection of the environment. Both acts were nonviolent because not single living being was hurt. Both acts were meant to make powerful statements. But DeChristopher's act did the approval of the left, while Lowers' act gets labeled as eco-terrorism. So we'll listen from Jeffrey Lowers talking to us and to mostly everybody about the need to fight back against this entire destruction of the planet.
The Civil Liberties Defense Center is a local organization dedicated to preserving everyone's civil rights. We defend activists and sue the police and the government when they break the law. My name's Lauren Regan. I'm the director and staff attorney of the organization. And my job really tonight is just to kind of facilitate things and to introduce our preliminary speaker, if you will. I've known him for over 10 years now. He is both a client and a good friend. His name is Jeffrey Lures, and I won't blow his thunder, but if you don't know who he is, he was charged with arson a few years ago. He was originally sentenced to 22 and a half years in prison, when the average sentence for a crime of that nature is 2 years in prison. And luckily, after a lengthy appeal, the courts did the right thing and overturned his conviction, and he got out of prison last December and is now a U of O student. So without further ado, I'm going to introduce Jeffrey Lures to all of you, and we'll get the evening going.
Glad that you all came out tonight, and thank you for that introduction, Lauren. So, about 11 years ago now, I went to prison for setting three SUVs on fire at a vacant car dealership now, Romania Chevrolet, just around the corner. And I took that action because I looked around and I saw a world that I love being destroyed, and it was being destroyed by greed and by people who care nothing for humanity. They care nothing for the natural world. And I chose to take action at the age of 21 because I didn't know what else to do to stop the machine. And now here it is, 10 years later, and things have not gotten better. I sat in prison and I watched Bush corrupt our world for 8 years. And take what little was left of our civil liberties away. And it's continuing to happen under the Obama administration. We're on a path that's marching us to our own death. Industrial civilization is killing us, and we all know it. In fact, it's such common knowledge that to say it is almost cliche. It isn't just that the world is dying. We're dying, each and every one of us. The human spirit has been corrupted in some and defeated in others. We have children and adults in inner cities that have never seen a forest. They've never even seen a tree that's older than 100 years old. This condition has become so prevalent that psychologists have coined the term nature deficiency disorder to describe it. We live on the only planet in our galaxy to have life, and we have a disorder called nature deficiency. There's something wrong with that. There's something wrong with the idea that we're somehow separate from nature, separate from the ecosystems and habitat that keep us whole. At the same time that we have children that have never even seen a forest, we have children that are being born already contaminated with poisons in their system, already contaminated by dioxin, pesticides, fire retardants, and mercury. In fact, every child born in the United States takes their first breath already contaminated by over 200 traceable environmental toxins and pollutants. Every single child. This is technology. This is civilization. This is what's supposed to make us the greatest species that this planet has ever seen. Every day I see a world I love being lost to a world I hate. But I know that someday this ends. Someday this all comes collapsing down. The question is, do we tear it down ourselves, or do we continue to remain slaves to a system that doesn't empower us, that actively takes our power? Do we continue to let our humanity be taken from us so that the greedy and powerful can take all they want until there's nothing left but a desiccated, dying husk of nature. Because that is the path before us. And we are now faced with an evolutionary choice. We choose a new direction, or we choose death. And that's what the documentary NCIV reminds us, is that ultimately the choice is ours to make. And no person, no matter how powerful or mighty, can make that decision for us if we choose to resist. Personally, I choose to resist. I choose to resist the fascist capitalist death machine as it marches forward. And I know that every day our numbers grow stronger and that our resistance grows stronger. And I know that we can stop it if we choose to.
So that was the powerful message of Jeffrey Lowers. If you want to know more about the perspective of NCIV, you go on NCIV.com, and also you can come to the premiere in Montreal on May 6th at L'Elysée of the movie with the presence of the director, Franklin Lopez, who also write an article for this actual magazine called Green Socialism, Road to Nowhere. And it was probably part of the articles of the Vancouver Music Web. So welcome back. You are still on CKUT.ca or 90.3 FM in Montreal. We are with Cameron Fenton and Tim McSorley, who both are writers for the Dominion newspaper. And we was at that point to talk about what is exactly climate justice. Tim begin to answer a little, like to answer, but maybe we can go further and you can also give your what is for you climate justice, because you're also with Climate Justice Montreal. So that's a notion that you are spreading.
I was just saying before that to myself, like my idea of climate justice is trying to kind of address more the systemic issues of climate change, and not just trying to offset it with more kind of carbon markets, and kind of looking at how to inject, I guess, ideas of social justice and equality into the debate. I don't know, Cam, if you have more to add on to that or other ideas around climate justice.
Sure. I find that climate justice in many ways represents a departure from the typical discourse around climate change, where it's meant to connect to the actual human impacts that a changing climate is having, as well as that projects that are fueling a changing climate are having. So when we're looking at, for example, the very real fact that a changing climate is currently hitting first and hardest in those places that have the least responsibility for causing it, you're seeing already massive displacement across the global south. You're seeing entire nations potentially disappearing underwater. You're seeing, you know, melting in the Canadian Arctic, which is something that's definitely addressed in this issue here, that's affecting Indigenous peoples and their way of not in, you know, the Canadian Arctic, their way of living, and which inherently connects to this becoming a survival issue. Climate justice also inherently brings it to mind, at least for myself, that there's something called climate injustice, and that's the reality of looking where we're talking about addressing things from a climate justice perspective, where we're looking at root causes and not just the symptoms. So we're not just talking about abstract numbers like parts per million of atmospheric concentration of carbon dioxide, but we're looking at the projects and the systems that perpetuate those projects. So we're looking at the tar sands, we're looking at how systems like colonialism in Canada allows for projects like the tar sands to exist. And we're talking about how, without changing these fundamental baseline systems, we cannot stop climate injustice. And it also connects to the fact that when you look at the mainstream discourse, a lot of the time you'll hear things like our planet is dying, or in some ways that in somehow that these impacts we're seeing in that these massive declines in sort of ecological regions around the world are disconnected from what we're doing, when the reality is that our planet isn't dying, it's being killed. And the people that are killing it have names and addresses.
So, but I would just have a question. Maybe it's like a very philosophical question, but answered on the way you want. You don't think like climate justice is a very anthropocentric concept, because justice is a very human concept? And I don't know why they use justice for climate who is talking about the environment or nature or Mother Earth, whatever we want to call this life we are part of.
Yeah, I think that's a fair criticism, but I think that in the end, it's trying to use a term that is, in some ways, I guess, kind of readily recognizable by people. And I think that reading the issue and talking about it, a lot of it centers around the human impact, but it's very much also tied to ecological destruction and with that, clearly an impact on the environment as a whole and on animals and on the entire ecosystem and not just on humans. I'd say maybe it'd be a fair criticism that this issue in particular focuses a lot on the human impact and doesn't necessarily talk about impact directly on natural habitat of animals. But I don't think that anyone would argue that the ideal goal and that the idea is that that's the entire ecological system that we're addressing, including natural habitat of animals and the survival of animals, and not simply only humans, because it's all connected, right? We can't survive without we're driving animal species extinct as well. So I think that's really important too.
And if I can just add to it, inherently any discussion around this is going to be anthropocentric because the problems are being caused by human beings. The tar sands aren't excavating themselves. Shale gas in Quebec will not frack itself. The BP Deepwater Horizon wasn't put there naturally. What we're talking about is a human manipulation of our environment on such a grand scale that we are potentially impacting not only our existence on this planet, but everything else. A lot of what sort of climate deniers will bring up is the fact that our world goes through natural climate cycles, which is very true, but we have never moved from one to another in less than 100 years. We're basically talking about going from an ice age to I apologize, my knowledge of pre-human time epochs on this planet is quite low, but it'd be like moving from an ice age to the Jurassic period to an ice age within a span of 100 years. And the only reason that's happening is because of human activities.
So I feel it's a good answer, but we can go further another time on that. But can you give an overview of what we will find on this issue? I think it's more important.
Yeah, definitely. So one of our goals with this issue was definitely to try to touch a wide range of topics and from across the country too. So not just centering maybe the typical areas that we talk about. So often news will focus on the impacts on large urban areas. There's quite a bit that we talk about oil sands extraction, but we wanted to move beyond simply talking about the tar sands as well and to go a bit further and also have a bit of an international perspective. So we have regional coverage. The local media co-ops in Toronto, Vancouver, and Halifax all did local coverage as well. So it ranges from development of alternative energy cooperatives in Nova Scotia and the fight against Colombian coal imports. Something that I learned that I didn't know is that 3/4 of Nova Scotia's energy is still produced from oil, from coal, and most of that is imported from Colombia. And so there's a real struggle right now to end that and to also kind of sensitize people to the fact that of the human rights abuses in Colombia that kind of go along with the coal extraction industry there. We have articles about the People's Assembly Summit in Toronto during the G20 meetings last summer and the kind of the process to keep that going and develop it. And there's been more recent People's Assembly's meetings in Toronto, and it's an international movement that's kind of grown out as an alternative to the UN structured summits. We have several infographics. We've tried to vary the types of content that we have this time around. So we have a few different maps outlining different alternatives, the frontline struggles, and also where extractive industries are located across Canada and also in the kind of northern areas. It's probably a piece kind of coordinated by Sandra Cuff, who's a journalist out in Vancouver. It's probably one of the most in-depth kind of visual pieces I've seen that addresses where those extractive industries are happening and the impacts on kind of communities across northern Canada, which is something we really don't hear much about. And then internationally, we have a piece on Let's see. What does red stand for again, Cam? Do you know off the top of your head? It's reforestation.
Reducing emissions through preventing deforestation and degradation.
That's right.
And don't quote me on that. Yeah.
And so essentially that's an international accord that people are trying to put in place, but that indigenous communities across the world are fighting against, because essentially it's pushing for the essentially the co-optation of their land and the co-optation of forests around the world as a way to try to basically take, as I mentioned earlier, taking existing forests and putting them under corporate control, and saying that maintaining those forests help offset future carbon emissions, which is simply a way to kind of greenwash and allow for more carbon emissions to take place while not actually reducing any kind of production. So there's quite a wide range. There's a lot more. We had support and input, I think, just directly with contributors. We had about 15 contributors, but we probably had about 24 people who did research and provided their input and helped out on this issue over the past. We've been working on it since November, so it's been a real collaborative effect and kind of project, and definitely touches on a lot more than we can get into today.
So because we just have 2 minutes to finish, can you just give like a very short explanation about what is changing the system, the map that you did?
Sure. I designed an infographic called Changing the System. The title is based on the call that has gone out around the world for system change, not climate change. And it highlights how that's actually going on currently in Canada, primarily looking sort of at two different ways it's going on. One being where there's grassroots community and climate justice-based organizing to stop destructive projects. And the other being where there's innovative community-based solutions being put into place. Including things like in Edmonton, Alberta, there's a community garden project called On Borrowed Ground, where they transform people's front gardens and front lawns into high-intensity urban gardens to sort of groundbreaking agreements like the agreements that was negotiated by the HIDA in the 90s and early 2000s, to the trilateral agreement in Barrier Lake, where you have indigenous communities who have created sort of groundbreaking land management and protection agreements that should, at the very least, theoretically, include direct First Nations consultation in decisions over land management, to various other things where you're seeing communities around Canada, from the tar sands to shale gas in Quebec, to the Enbridge Northern Gateway pipeline in northern BC, where communities are standing up and saying no more, and actively working to either stop projects from starting or shut down existing ones.
And now you are inviting people to this lunch of this current issue.
Yeah, next Wednesday, April 6th, we're going to have a launch of the issue at Casa del Poblo at 5 o'clock. It's a 5 à 7, and then afterwards we're going to still be around there having drinks and talking with people. And the idea behind all our special issues, and I guess with the media co-op in general, is that it's not just a publication. It's meant to inspire discussion and debate and be a tool for mobilization. So we're hoping people will come out and pick up their copies of this issue. It's our launch for Montreal. So it's the first time we'll really be doing a big distribution of the issue here. And we're going to have participation from, Cam's going to be there. I think you're going to be speaking. he's not sure yet. Maud Prudhomme from the Réseau Québécois des Groupes Écologistes is going to be speaking as well about the Quebec situation. Jesse Purcell, who's part of the Just Seeds Collective, is going to be there as well. He designed an image for this issue, but it's also a co-launch with a new portfolio from Just Seeds called Resourced. And it's a new work that they've put out that is done by their collective of artists from across the Americas that focuses on the impact of kind of mining and oil industries across the Americas, and is made specifically to go along with different campaigns that are going around. It's a beautiful piece. It's going to be up on the walls at Casa del Poblo. So that's next Wednesday at 5 o'clock. And it's basically by donation. We're going to have issues there to give out by donation. We'll probably have a raffle and everything too. And we're just hoping people come out and we can talk a bit more about how we can organize locally around issues of climate justice and just get the issue into people's hands.
And you can go on Dominion Paper or MediaCoop.ca or Montreal.MediaCoop.ca.
Yeah, and as of next week, we're going to start posting articles from this issue too, but the whole issue will only be online sometime in May.